Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America, when I'll be glad for next weekend, or this weekend coming up, I guess. It'll be the first day of spring. I'm liking it being lighter longer, but boy, has it been cold and rainy. Thank God we didn't get the snow we were supposed to get, but boy, for about 5 days now, it's just been cold and rainy and gloomy and yuck, but perhaps rhymes with yuck, we'll be getting a little luck of the Irish, perhaps. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. We'll talk a little bit about that later. Interesting holiday we chose to pick up, and hopefully there won't be a lot of people out there making, what do you call those massive spread episodes when you're out without face covering, crowded together, drinking too much, which is pretty much what I've known St. Patrick's Day to be in the past. We do know that, or have heard over the years, that St. Patrick chased the snakes out of Ireland. I wonder why they even showed up in Ireland. But I did watch a couple interesting programs in the last few days, wanting to get in the spirit while I'm being shut in. And so I'll have some myths and legends to talk to you about soon. But before that, for those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. So, again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about me, you can check out my website, inaflash.org, or like me on Facebook at inaflash.org, facebook.com/inaflash.org. Okay, Brain Injury Awareness Month. What are we? We're on the 17th, so we're about halfway through Brain Injury Awareness Month. Might talk a little bit about that later, although we've been talking about it a lot this month. Brain injury survivors are pretty much aware of it every day, as are their caregivers. What we like to do during this month, although some of us are here again every day, every month, to help spread awareness to others who aren't aware of brain injury. You know, so many times people, even medical professionals, and we're grateful, don't get me wrong, but they're aware of the brain injury and save our lives at the point of impact, for which we're grateful. What a lot of them don't seem to know about, and there's not really a coordination of care between different practitioners, is what we deal with afterward. And again, I don't have my list with me, but things like short-term memory loss, sensory overload, sleep issues, chronic pain issues, depression, anxiety, brain fog, our mind processing slower than it did before. So cognitive disorders, behavioral issues, and many times after our brain injuries, some of these might not exhibit until a ways down the road due to, I just had someone tell me that they couldn't hear me, and I'm hoping it's his computer. And that you are able to hear me. I don't want to go on just in case. Anyway, there are about 2.5 million brain injuries a year, and I want to make sure you can hear. Okay. Just doing a test here. One moment, folks. I am going to continue to talk, and we'll just see what somebody in my chat room mentioned to me, that they weren't able to hear me. So I'm not aware. Look, my microphone is on. I'm not aware of any reason that you wouldn't be able to. So I'm really hoping that it's his computer and not... not mine. Okay, let's see what he has to say. Well, I'm just going to continue here. One of the things I will tell you about is some brain injury basics. And brain injuries is unpredictable in its consequences, like I was just telling you. Brain injury affects who we are and the way we think, act, and feel. It can change everything about us in a matter of seconds. The most important things to remember are: a person with a brain injury is a person first. No two brain injuries are exactly the same. And that's true. But the things in the list I gave you earlier, not everyone with brain injury has to have all of those things, but I guarantee you everybody with brain injury has at least some of those things. Okay. I was just testing now. I had someone call in to see if they can hear. If you can hear me on the telephone, on. You should be able to hear me on the computer also. So if you can type that into the chat, that would be great. I didn't mean you had to stay on the phone necessarily. You might just need to reboot your computer. I just wanted to make sure that you were able to hear me while I'm reading all these facts so people don't hang up and they know that I am here. And we never know whether it's the system here or the system there. Great. Thanks so much. Then what you might want to do is reboot, because if you can hear me there, great. Good. Thank you so much for letting me know that. I was going to say my microphone is on and I could hear everything when I came in. So good. I hope to have you reboot, and you don't have to stay on the phone unless you want to. And I may be dragging you on to talk about leprechauns before you take your nap later. In the meantime, back to Brain Injury Awareness Month. So, as I was saying, on that list, now where I got that list, by the way, was from taking notes. Things would come up that I would hear over and over with guests. I've been doing this weekly for about 10 years, and someone would, you know, survivors would talk about frequent headaches, or they would talk about living in a world of post-it notes, meaning they can't remember things, particularly short-term memory, so they take notes and are living in that world, or that they used to be that bright light bothers them and loud noises bother them, and that never used to happen before. So it can be very problematic. You say just turn down the TV or dim the lights, and you can do that at home, but you know, when you're used to being a certain way, like perhaps you used to go to business meetings or parties, and maybe there's four conversations going on around you, some music in the background, maybe some flashing lights if there's a dance floor, or just brighter lights so people can see. And those kind of things didn't bother you before. I know for me, when I'm not in a situation just like that, but particularly that being in a place where a number of conversations are going on, I used to be able to track with all of those conversations and ping pong back and forth. And now I really can't. It gets frustrating and I kind of just shut it all out, or just try to focus on one and shut out all the rest. So the nuances may seem simple to people that don't know, but you stack a number of those together. Again, things I've heard from many, many survivors over the years, and you come up with a list of about a dozen things, like I have, that, as I say, not every brain injury survivor has all dozen of those things, but all of them have at least a couple. So while no two brain injuries are exactly the same, trauma to the brain elicits certain consequences. The effects of the brain injury are complex and vary greatly from person to person, although, as we noted, there can be a lot of similarities. And the effects of brain injury depend on factors such as the cause, location, and severity. Now, I can tell you that falls are the number one cause brain injury. Uh, That's a big one. Okay, good. Glad you can hear. I'm going to keep going. Now, a couple things have changed since I started. Back a decade ago, they still looked at concussions as getting your bell rung and not a big deal. And then more work and study was done on concussion. Now, concussion is considered a brain injury. When I started, my first brain trauma, first and worst, I think, was my ruptured brain aneurysm. And that is considered an acquired brain injury. And that was in a separate category. And now that is listed under the big umbrella of traumatic brain injury. And it never surprised me, because if you've been through a stroke or an aneurysm or an AVM, you know that it's traumatic and it has to do with your brain. So it wouldn't be a surprise to me that it was a traumatic brain injury. In fact, when I got here and somebody said, "What's she doing here? She's not a TBI, she's an ABI." I thought, "Oh, ouch. Well, I've been called worse. What is an ABI?" It was 17 years since I had had my aneurysm, and I didn't know that I was an ABI. So thank God. We're all under the umbrella of the TBI now. Now, a traumatic brain injury, just to distinguish things for you, is what the traumatic brain injury causes, as opposed to an acquired brain injury, is where the impact comes from. For a traumatic brain injury, the assault is from the outside of your head. And again, the number one cause is falls, but assaults, motor vehicle accidents, sports, recreation injuries, abusive head trauma, such as shaken baby syndrome or domestic abuse, gunshot wounds, workplace injuries, child abuse, military actions, such as blast injuries. Now, those all come from outside, hit the head, and cause the trauma from the outside to the inside. An ABI, on the other hand, originates from the inside. The trauma happens on the inside of the brain. Those include things like stroke, hemorrhage or blood clot, infectious disease, meningitis, encephalitis, seizure, electric shock, tumors, metabolic disorders, neurotoxic poisoning such as carbon monoxide poisoning, lack of oxygen, drowning, choking, hypoxic or anoxic brain injury, or drug overdose. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of the difference. Again, things like stroke and aneurysms, AVMs, are ABIs. Things like car accidents, domestic abuse, blast injuries are ABIs. So telling you a little bit more, and I want to, looking for something specific here, and I'll find it. I'm waiting also for my guest, and so I'm going to check the studio here, and I don't see that she is here right now. I'm not quite sure where she is. We've had a number of shows on in the past about companion animals, and my goodness, sorry, somebody racing up the street outside, I can hear. Odd. This is just an odd night altogether. First, the sound was kind of messed up. In any case, my guest tonight was to be, and hopefully still will be, from, I wonder why the hold time isn't working. Yes, Falls, that's how I, yes, exactly, Ron. We had a contest during, oh, and I have a very sad story that dovetails with this for someone there in the chat room. We had a contest one year where I was testing brain injury awareness amongst our own, and I asked some different quiz questions. Maybe tonight we'll do St. Patrick's Day quiz. But that night we were doing it on brain injury, and I asked the number one cause, and Ron in our chat answered correctly that falls was the number one cause, and for that he won a t-shirt. I guess I didn't get it together this year to get together some of our survivors who have prizes, but that night I did, and we had a quiz going through the show, and something unfortunate, you know, it's weird that you'd bring that up tonight, of all nights, because I know where that t-shirt came from, who the survivor was, and you might want to remember Greg, not Craig, but Greg, in your thoughts and prayers, as I was, first of all, his father died about a month ago, and then something else horrible happened about a week and a half later. It loosely has something to do with what my guest and I were going to be talking about. As I said, we've had shows on companion animals before and animals being used for therapy to help people with their mental state, to help people with traumatic brain injury. There's quite a few. Hetra uses horses. We've had them on before. People can go and care for and ride horses. Of course, we've had service dogs on, and people come on and talk to us about the difference between a companion animal, a service animal, and talk about the different gifts or talents dogs can be trained for. And tonight, we were going to be talking to someone who is outside the box in that their organization uses wildlife. And I was going to make a joke and say I was a wallaby wannabe because a wallaby is one of the animals that they have. They also have quite a few other wildlife type animals, ones that you don't see every day, like your companion dog or bunny or horse or some of those that we've talked about before. So I haven't ever heard of an organization that uses wild animals to do this same type of thing. But in any case, the person that you won your shirt from after his father died about a week and a half later, he had waited for about a year and a half for his service animal to be trained. I don't want to go into his business, but for different conditions that he has related to his brain injury, when you, you know, get a real service animal, they will train that dog to suit your set of contingencies. And that takes some time. And so it took him over a year to get his dog. And I remember how happy he was when he got his dog and how he thinks the dog has just saved his life. Yes, that's exactly right, Ron. Unfortunately, after his dad died, a couple weeks later, he was on a highway and saw someone that was broken down, and his dog was on a leash, but he stopped to try to help this stranger, a random act of kindness, and a car, it was a highway, and even though the dog was on a leash, a car was going way too fast, and the dog came out just a tiny bit too far, and the car was just a little too close, and unfortunately, his dog was killed out there on the highway. The dog that was his service and companion animal that he had waited a year and a half for. And boy, you talk about grief and pain. You know, we talked the other night, and I felt so bad. You know, it's difficult to know what to say, except that you're so very sorry. It was a terrible accident with the dog, a horrible, horrible thing that no one should ever have to see. And then just a couple weeks after his father died unexpectedly. Now, one of the things that I found, I can go on and read more stats about brain injury, and I might do that later, but, you know, one of the things that I found is all these things, a loved one dying, your pet dying, losing your job, a relationship falling apart. These are all things that cause people without a brain injury, without a pandemic, without politics, without protests, just everyday people to be insane with pain and torn apart with grief. And man, over a year into a pandemic, where I remember sitting here when it first started, you know, when we were first hearing about it. I don't know when you were, but my area got its first case about 10 days ago, a year ago, because they just interviewed a person that was our first case to check in on her a year later. Unfortunately, she's one of those long haulers that you may have heard about, and those are people that get COVID, and it's not just like the flu. They don't just get real sick for a few days and then get better. They get very, very sick, and the virus damages organs that they have, different ones. Now, the brain has been one of them. I've heard of people having clots, strokes, and encephalitis right around the time they had COVID. One of those people died, and she was someone who had had an aneurysm back in the early 90s. Now, it's not like she couldn't have an aneurysm again. We all know we can. But she had just gotten over COVID and had an aneurysm. And when they went in to work on it, she stroked out and died. Our first COVID positive person here in our town, when they checked in on her a year later, she's getting breathing treatments 3 times a day still, and it's been a year. So the scarring and damage in her lungs from having COVID, and this young lady was a young lady. The other lady was about my age, and that is certainly not an old lady, but not a young lady either. But our first person here who's getting these breathing treatments, she was a young girl, probably. She is a young lady, probably in her 20s, and still getting three or four breathing treatments a day, a year after having COVID. I have a very good friend of mine that I just talked to earlier today, and she, I told you guys about her before. I was very concerned because back at the 6-month point, now it's been probably 10 or 11 months since she got COVID. But I was talking to you when she, at about the 6-month point out, and she had been in the hospital like 7 times in that 6 months after being diagnosed with COVID. And that continued, that has continued all this time, up to about 10 or 11 times. And she keeps getting pneumonia over and over and over, keeps getting pneumonia. She had to go through a terrible test. I wouldn't wish on anyone. She had to have an open lung biopsy where they took out a wedge of her lung. And God, I hate the efficiency in a lot of the healthcare system these days. Had that terrible test and actually had to wait 2.5 weeks for results from that. What they saw was just a haze on the scan that was unfamiliar to them. It wasn't a mass. They couldn't see clearly. It was a haze, and they didn't understand what that was. So they did the biopsy and sent it in, and she texted me today and told me that it was a fungus, some kind of a horrible fungus, and that there is a way to treat it, but it is almost a year regimen of taking a drug that has some very scary side effects to it, some not so good side effects to it. So she's been suffering for almost a year in back of getting COVID, and looks like she'll be struggling the good part of the next year treating the damage that the COVID did. So, you know, for those who are wondering about the vaccine, about wearing a mask, if death is the worst you have to be scared of, you know, you hear of people that get it, and if they're fortunate and they're going to wind up dying from COVID, they will die quickly, and a lot of them do. They get it, and 2 days later, they're gone. But I think we brain injury survivors will tell you just on the basis of what we've dealt with our brain injuries, that it wasn't just that day that it happened or around the surgery or around the accident and the immediate recovery period, but years, decades afterward, that we're still suffering the effects of. And there just isn't anything that fixes it. It can be treated, but the damage done was the damage done, and it doesn't get reversed. And yes, there's neuroplasticity and a lot of things we talk about, and we can, our brain can reroute and think down another neural path, and we can self-correct some of the deficits that we've been left. At the same time, if you've had a brain bleed and blood, you bleed on brain tissue, that brain tissue is dead. And so neuroplasticity is a great study. But science, as someone pointed out to me the other day when we were talking about COVID and some other things, I was saying I was frustrated, and that was before, you know, before I heard from my friend today, and before that piece was on the news about our city's first positive a year ago, was that the goalposts keep changing in the science. And somebody pointed out to me that science isn't carved in stone. Science is what you get based on the knowledge that you have at the time. And as things are evolving, and we'll use this because it's a good example, COVID is new. I haven't had anything like it. Not for 100 years anyway. Similar things, so there might be some educated guesses, some educated testing of what maybe we should try, what probably absolutely wouldn't work, that sort of thing based on science of the past. But the science on COVID is being made as we speak. My complaint was with the World Health Organization and the CDC, that the rules keep changing. They're supposed to be the experts. And so when I go to their page and want to know which group is up for the vaccine or whatever, there it was going to be people with pre-existing conditions like a lot of us here who aren't 70 and over or 65 and over, but do have underlying conditions that would make us susceptible to the virus. They were going to have us next. And then when the clash between the teachers' union and the parents who've had their kids at home for a year came up loud and strong, and they contributed a lot of money to the campaign, they decided to put those teachers in there next and bump us to another class, and that's a class, no pun intended. And that's fine. I know that the kids are suffering greatly. In fact, the largest segment of self-harming and suicide growth right now isn't what we talk about sometimes, the 22 a day of the veteran population. This is in kids that are 9 to 16 years old. Can you imagine 9 years old, 9 to 16 years old, not being in school, not being around their friends, being isolated in a way that they've never known is something, apparently one of those unintended consequences that they weren't prepared to deal with. Science didn't tell us that things like overdosing, suicide, desolate isolation would lead to mental issues, self-harming, a greater increase in suicide. Nobody brought that up in the beginning. We just needed to close down. That was the logic. That was the science. If you don't have people out there mixing, then they're not going to be a contagion to each other. That seemed obvious at the time. And we can debate whether it was or wasn't. It worked for me. So far, I haven't gotten COVID, and I don't really go anyplace. I've missed a lot of things with friends, family, moments I share with people I love, foregone moments because of this virus. And then I know other people that are going about their life as if this isn't going on and it's not going to happen to them. But unfortunately, a couple of those people are people I've been telling you about on the show. My friend I was just telling you about, who had the lung biopsy, was only getting together for family events. So you think back to last summer, and they told us that there would be a spike after 4th of July. Stay home, don't do the 4th of July picnic. Mother's Day, Father's Day, 4th of July, da-da-da-da. That there would be a spike because family members would get together and you didn't know who each one of those family members had been with. And I remember having a talk with my friend back then, and she just couldn't imagine that her family, that she'd be able to pick that up from her family, and nobody was sick. And then four of them got COVID. And unfortunately, she has drawn the short straw. Someone else who is a brain injury survivor, Minnesota Matt, who calls in here, same thing happened with his family. His family got together for a group event. And so, you know, I listened to a couple news channels, and they're both extreme. I laugh here because I say one is so far right, one is so far left. You know they're both lying, but you know that the truth is somewhere in between. So if you listen to them both, you know, the truth is somewhere in between. You know, they're questioning the vaccine, and they're questioning who can tell them when and how they can get together with their family and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Fine. It's just that I've seen now, in the beginning when we were having this talk a year ago and this was just happening, most all of us didn't know anyone who had had COVID yet. We might have heard of someone and we had seen it on the news, but we didn't know anybody. I don't know about you, but a year later, for me, I know people who have died, more than one. I know people who have suffered family spread. I know people that have gotten it, and it's been like the worst flu they ever had, and they were in hell for 2 or 3 weeks, and then they think that they're better, and I hope they'll stay better. And I also know more than one person who's a long hauler who, gosh, my prayers go up for all those people because I get it. And I think a lot of us here at Brain Injury Radio get it. We may not have had COVID, but we did have something that caused us to have issues that we're still dealing with years later that have made, I'll say that have changed the quality of our life. It was up to us. It might have ruined our quality of life, but because of actions we were willing to take, attitudes we were willing to change, our own, we became able to keep moving forward, find some compensatory strategies, get an attitude check, be around some people around here, sometimes in support groups, but people who don't challenge, but who understand what we're going through. And that might be what some of the long haulers go through, except they might wind up a little bit luckier because all the brain injuries don't happen all at once, like in the last year. One thing they're going to find, people with certain symptoms, people, and I don't know what they all are yet, but if it's continuing to get pneumonia, if it's getting asthma when you didn't have it before, if it's a clot or a stroke, a heart issue, so many different things have come up. The taste and smell issue doesn't sound like much, but if you're used to tasting and smelling, it's got to be odd. And vision disturbances, those are things I've heard. Over this last year, when doctors see a clump of these symptoms come up over the course of, say, a year and a half with a whole bunch of their patients, and those patients happened to have COVID, then they're probably going to put it together quicker than they have with brain injury, because we've been spread out over time and nobody was paying attention. Most of the time we were finding out from each other. I see there's a couple people on the board. If you'd like to talk, press 1. The number is 424-243-9540. If you'd like to talk, feel free to press 1. I was just looking. I have, I had a guest that was supposed to be with us tonight, and I texted her just before the show. In fact, talked to her yesterday, and so hopefully she's okay. I saw that she did read my message, but I didn't hear back from her. So I'm not sure what's going on with that, but I will let you know the name of the company. And I was really excited to talk to her. So Tiffany, if you're out there, 424-243-9540 and press 1 so that I know you're not just listening. And it's fine if you call into that number and you just want to listen. If you're my guest or you're somebody who would like to talk about anything, talk about Brain Injury Awareness Month, talk about St. Patrick's Day, talk about COVID and the changes, please feel free to do that. Tonight will be kind of an open mic. I wish I would have uploaded some music if I would have known my guest wasn't going to show or was going to be late. And like I said, hopefully she's okay. We have been in close touch the last couple days, so I'm just a little surprised. But in any case, like I said, press 1 if you'd care to talk. So, let's see, covered brain injury and COVID, a little bit about COVID. And going back to the animals, yeah, sorry about that. That was the long way around one of our own. What I was going to say after that long detour was just life on life's terms that I talk about in the beginning of each show. The loss of a loved one, the loss of our pet, losing a job like so many people have. There's a stress scale that used to be popular that went around, and it would rank the hardest, the biggest stressors. Health issues were one of them, a death in the family, that sort of thing. And all I was going to say is that those things are hard and create a tremendous amount of stress for people who don't have brain injury, for regular people. For people who do have brain injury that are dealing with challenges off and on all the time, neuro fatigue, excuse me, that's another one for my list. I take a nap every day before the show. And we're not just talking about tired, as many of you know. We're talking about I have to lay down now. I just can't focus, you know. My mind is going click, click, click at a certain pace, and it just starts slowing down until I have to stop and lay down and recharge my battery, is what I call it. But during this time, you know, over a year into hearing these stories and hearing about COVID and going through our own life on life's terms, whether that's any one of those things that I mentioned before, it's so much harder. It's almost unbearable. Who is the famous person that said these are the times that try men's souls? Okay, women too, yes, but I'm not going to get hung up on being politically correct. I'm just going to say that this has been a difficult time for everybody. You know, for everybody, this has been a hard time. And so with everything else that's going on too, or that has been going on the last year, people have an underlying sense of chaos and anxiety going on. And it just makes everything else that's already unbearably hard even harder to deal with. So, gee, I thought I just saw a New York number pop up too. And then it popped away. 585, call back in. You're my guest. I know you are. Playing possum out there, speaking of wildlife. And in any case, so we've talked a little bit about brain injury tonight for Brain Injury Awareness Month. And I might talk to you a little bit about coping with stress. In fact, not just coping with stress, but this was one of the things that I looked at when I wanted to see how it differed, if any. But it was actually an article that talked about COVID going on, regular stressors that we've become accustomed to and that we have a hard time juggling are even more difficult. So I wanted to look at the impact of stress with COVID, not with COVID, but having COVID around us, coupled with life on life's terms, the things that we get stressed out about anyway, and see what it had to say. And the CDC answered. And by the way, I wasn't putting them down earlier. I was just frustrated because I was trying to find information, and what I had seen at one point had changed. That information wasn't there anymore. And that's when I had the talk with the friend that said, you know, science, again, is not something that's carved into granite. Science is forever changing as more information is introduced. So, you know, it's kind of funny. I shook my head for a minute and the light bulb went off and I was like, wow, that really makes sense. You know, that, but the reason I didn't pick it up right away is because what have we been hearing on every channel? Listen to the science, listen to the science, listen to the science. You know, we've been hearing that on every channel, and the science is reported differently depending on who you listen to or where you look. Or you can look in the same place and the science is different next week than it was last week. Well, that's because science is discovery, and discovery happens as new information is interjected and as things evolve. So they don't really know. They know more about COVID now than they did a year ago. They don't know as much now about COVID as they're going to a year from now. And we're all learning together. There's some good in that, that we have it together. A lot of us with our brain injuries when we had them, there wasn't really a together. We kind of learned it on our own. If for some of us, like me, believe it or not, there was a time there, not that long ago either, in a relative sense, that there wasn't a computer on every desk. There wasn't such a thing as social media, that we really ought to rethink a bit. And there weren't support groups. And, like I said, the practitioners were well-versed on saving our lives, but not in dealing with, like a surgeon wasn't going to be the one to deal with that list of symptoms I talked about earlier in the show. He was going to send you to a neurologist or go back to your primary care doctor, to a psychiatrist. That's usually where they wind up sending you. And I make the joke that that used to offend me. It offended the hell out of me. I was injured bad and I was having fallout from my injury. People didn't seem to get it or believe me. I didn't get it and I didn't want it. And so I was angry when they wanted to send me to a shrink, like that was going to fix these symptoms that I had been carrying with me that were wearing me out. And then I developed a sense of humor, like we all have to if we want to survive this COVID or our brain injury. And that was that if you weren't a little crazy before you got into the healthcare system, you certainly were going to be once you did start the dance with the healthcare system. So, if your insurance pays for it, you might as well do a couple hours on the shrink's couch because you're probably going to need it. Now, did that solve my chronic pain issues, my forgetfulness, my sensory overload? No. My processing slower? No. No, it didn't fix any of that. But what I am able to do is dump on a stranger who gets paid to listen. They picked that job. And boy, they must have their hands full going to each other for treatment this past year, because they've got their own issues going on. Most of them are doing telemed now, and we were all a mess. Do you remember the beginning of telemed a year ago, the first time you tried to have an appointment and the screen froze up and you heard the you couldn't really hear what the practitioner had to say? Luckily, at least in my experience with the Zoom meetings and some of those things, that kind of communication has gotten better depending on the system that healthcare providers use. It's slightly better. A lot of them will even FaceTime now. So that has worked out well, but we can't do that forever. In any case, let me see here. Which way do I want to go? St. Patrick's Day or coping with stress? Well, I think one thing I'll do, and then we will have a little fun and I'll go back. It looks like my guest, and maybe what I'll do is play a quick song and send a text to my guest and see if maybe they didn't set their clock back or something. They didn't spring ahead. Because we still have about an hour in the show. And so I will play a song, and it's by our founder, and the band is called V-T-H-E-E, V, the letter R, Insane, VRinsane.com. They're working on their final album, which is a series. Quite a few songs on it. I encourage you to check out their website. They already have 5 or 6 different albums, but this is going to be, they're looking at, we'll see if things change again. I got some emails today about some events that were canceled last year, rescheduled for this summer. They canceled them again and are looking at 2022, so maybe he won't be going on his last tour beginning in August. But right now, they're still planning on it. And The Rapture is their new album. And this is a song called Ghost. I really like this. I think it's got a great hook to it. So if you give me just a minute, I'm going to text my guest. We're going to hear Ghost by The R Insane. And then I'll come back and either give you a St. Patrick's Day quiz and we'll talk about the legends and myths of St. Patrick's Day, or I'll elaborate a little bit more about stress and COVID, because right now it's not really just the COVID too, it's the vaccine. You know, the vaccine's out there. And people are hearing it's much better to take your chances with the vaccine than with COVID. I'm inclined to agree with that. And then I heard the horror story of AstraZeneca, which they're using in Europe. And don't get nervous if you're in the States. We are not using it in the States. They haven't even filed for the emergency use, the emergency use permission to be able to use it here, and it's getting pulled off the market a little in Europe until they can study it a little further. But that particular vaccine is causing clotting, which stopped me dead in my tracks and horrified me. Then it was not only COVID, but the vaccine I was afraid of. Well, here in the States, we have Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. There have not been those kind of incidents reported, at least not that anyone is talking about or letting us see. And we don't have the other vaccine, but so that adds a little more stress. We all wanted to have a party and yay, relief when news of the vaccine came, because what a lot of people hoped is that we'd get the vaccine, go in and get those two shots, ba-boom, and that that would be the end of it. Kind of like with brain injury, right? You go through the treatment, you think you're going to be able to go back to your life as it was before. Eventually with this, in some ways, I think I don't know if we will or not. I would like to think that there will be a herd immunity. We will get the vaccine down pat. We'll be able to get the numbers manageable like the flu is every year. About there goes that myth that people talked about in the beginning of this, that it was the same as the flu. Well, there's a little difference between 30,000 and 500,000, over 500,000. So big difference between COVID and the flu. But now we've got a little more stress. Just because the vaccine, when am I going to get the vaccine? Which vaccine will it be? Will they remember to tell me in 3 weeks or 2 weeks, depending on which vaccine it is? And do I have anything to worry about because it's emergency use? And the good news is they got something based on the best science guesses that they had at the time. At warp speed, some relief. So it's not like the Middle Ages and a third of the population gets knocked out. But it is another stressor because COVID is still going on in the background. They might not be talking about it as much on TV because they don't want to affix blame. You know, they kind of allowed the virus to become political for a long time there. And so they were going back and forth, back and forth. Now we're not hearing about it as much. And numbers are down, but at the same time, three different countries have had a version of a mutated coronavirus, and they're all closing down for the third time. It's France, Italy, and I can't remember the third. I'm not sure if it's UK or Spain. I don't remember the third, but I do know Italy and France are going, boom, back down, shut down, into quarantine again, because this new variation is spreading faster than the original COVID did and is really causing the nightmare all over again. And what we're talking about right now with us, because we know it will get here, just like the last one did, is can we outrun getting the vaccine to hopefully give us an added layer of protection on top of wearing the mask and social distancing and washing our hands and disinfecting and all those things people are sick of. They're ready for spring and to run naked in the streets without their mask and throw their sanitizer and just life is normal. But I think most of the listeners here have felt that way before at some time about their brain injury, but found out that that's wishful thinking. That's not the reality that the situation calls for. And I think that's what we're probably going to find out here too. And so what we want to do is try to get as many people vaccinated as possible and try to outrun the spread of this new mutation coming here from Europe, and before it spreads a blanket over our country, we'll have one more layer of protection with that vaccine, I hope. So here's Ghost, and I'll be right back. Okay, that was Ghost by The R Insane. Sorry about that. I did talk to my guest, and I think she is going to be calling in. We'll see. We'll have about 30 minutes to talk about Rockstar Wildlife rock stars. Sorry about that. In any case, okay, I'm going to, well, let me go to St. Patrick's Day real quick. Well, actually, I'll just tell you what I heard last night. I heard that St. Patrick, who people, again, equate with being Irish and chasing the snakes out of Ireland, was really Scottish. He was born in Scotland. And the story says that, 243-9540. The story has it that the Vikings, when they came, kidnapped him, took him down to Ireland, and that he was on the cusp of Ireland and England. That's where he got his religious training, and eventually he was able to break away. After many years, he was able to break away and went. He had already started spreading the word of God through England and Ireland, and wound up staying in Ireland and became the patron saint of Ireland. So I thought that was pretty interesting that St. Patrick was actually a hijacked Scots, beautiful country, and we'll maybe talk about fairies and leprechauns a little bit later. My guest tonight had a late meeting, ran late in a meeting tonight, but Wildlife Rock Stars is a company that uses wildlife and conservation outreach to help traumatic brain injury survivors thrive. My guest tonight is the Director of Wildlife Education, Tiffany Joubert, and I'm going to go ahead and just bring Tiffany on and have her tell us a little bit about, well, I'll bring her on first, and then we'll talk about it. Hello, Tiffany, is this you?
This is me. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. And that's fine that the meeting runs late. Things happen. But I was real excited to have you on the show tonight. We talked earlier a little bit about companion animals. One of the reasons I was very interested, I made a joke. I told him I was a wallaby wannabe after talking to you the other day. And, you know, we've had people on over the years. You know, I've had someone on from Hetra, and we've talked about horses and, of course, companion or service dogs. When I first saw your stuff and it was Wildlife Rock Stars, and I saw the wallaby, and we were looking at a variety of wildlife, and you and I kind of shared how I'm an animal lover beyond your regular domestics as well.
You really are.
I was very interested for you to, first of all, why don't you just, I'm going to ask you just a couple of quick questions and you go where it takes you. But the first thing, I guess, is how did you get interested in doing what you're doing right now with Wildlife Rock Stars? And then tell us a little bit about the program and what it's designed to do.
Yeah, so, Kim, I know you have an incredible owl that hangs out in your yard, and he brings you so much joy, right? So
yes.
We have different animals that are used for animal therapy, and we are located in upstate New York, and we have animals that are used for animal therapy, and then we also have animals that are used for our shows, and our members who have traumatic brain injuries, they take these animals out on shows, and they do recited scripts about the animals, and they help people around the world learn about these animals in particular, and that helps them gain confidence, and it helps them gain cognitive abilities, and it also helps them with animal therapy.
That's really awesome. I could see the, you know, a lot of times, as you mentioned, that you know, the self-esteem takes a hit along with the cognitive, physical
right.
issues. There's emotional issues that go along with having the injury, and then trust issues, because
right.
a lot of us who've had a brain injury have some problems either with trust from the medical professionals or the people
or
around
the case
us
managers.
Who don't. Are there case managers? Yeah. A lot of trust issues. And so animals, of course, are characteristically, well, at least in the dog stage, but I found it with all of them, even the owl, there's just a different way to communicate than I do with the domestics. But cool to be engaged by these animals and to have that hands-on experience for the survivors, because you can't really fail, you know, when you're showing them the right way
right.
to do things and the right way to present. There's no way to fail. There's only a way to feel empowered and purposeful.
Right. Yeah. So our members come in and they pick out their healing plan for us. So let's say our members that have traumatic brain injury, they say that they want to work on work skills, right? So they come in and they say they want to work on work skills, and I will give them a 3-step plan to work with, like, the ferret. So you have to change out the blankets, you have to feed the animal, they have to water the animal. Now, also holding the animal releases endorphins. As you know, just watching, you've talked about your owl that's in the backyard, just watching the owl or having a dog or having a cat releases endorphins that we don't normally think about in our everyday life, and that triggers a different brain system than we may normally think about.
Yes. Yes, absolutely it does. You know, I was... Yes, absolutely. And it breaks up the... that place that a person is in after a brain injury where
right.
it's been so long since that type of endorphin has been released. You know, a person
right.
might be stuck or depressed, have anxiety. And one of the things that the animals do for me anyway is give me a sense of calm. They also help me with a sense of humor, just from the standpoint that there might be nothing I feel like smiling about right now because this, and this are going wrong. And then the dog or the owl or my bird, my indoor bird.
The ferret in our case.
Yeah, you know, we'll do something funny to us. It might be something normal to them, but, you know, something funny to us. One of my littlest dog, you know, the two dogs, the Frenchie and the Bug, Libby, they both weigh about 28 pounds. And Tino, the Chiweenie, weighs about 12 pounds. And he's the baby. Well, now, either one of those other dogs could sit on him and squish him or take his head off if they felt like it. But Tino is a hoarder. He not only has his own set of toys that are only his toys, and they're not even allowed to look at his own little pile of miniature teddy bears. Those are just his. But those are just his. They can't even look at him. If they even walk within a foot of him, you hear this growling. And none of the dogs have ever, they don't bite. They're not mean. They're all, you know, fine that way. Except that, you know, Tino sounds serious, but Libby just blows him off, you know, kind of looks at him like, you're weird, and walks away, and she doesn't really let it affect her. She just looks at him and walks away from him. Benny, the Frenchie, he's such a sensitive soul that he gets this hurt. Like, he'll start playing with his keys. There's a great big toy box of toys that belong to all the dogs. And, you know, he'll start being a good boy, just sitting there in his bed, chewing his keys and minding his own business. And Tino will sleep.
Noise, right, Kim?
Yeah. The keys make noise, and Tino will sneak out of nowhere. You won't have seen him, you know, for quite a while. And he'll slink out of nowhere and walk up and grab the keys away from Benny and walk away. And Benny just looks up at me with most hurt feelings.
Big
and Tino walks.
Eyes.
Yes. And I feel so bad for him. I say, you know, and I say to Tino, you know, I'll get up because Tino goes and sets them in his stash, you know. He's got Woody the Woodpecker and Mr. Bill and the keys and the things over there, you know, and I'll give him grief, you know, for doing that and say, you don't know how lucky you are, you know, that Libby just doesn't care much about you, but it isn't nice to hurt Benny's feelings. You know, you're a rotten little dog, you know. And
it's amazing how our animals have personalities like we do, right? So we have a ring-tailed lemur. Now, our ring-tailed lemur's name is Elvis, and Elvis is super attached to Catherine, and Catherine actually just recently got a new job. So we are training Elvis to handle Sarah and handle me and jump on our shoulder and come to shows. Now, we train Elvis with blueberries. So he's kind of like training with the keys, right? And so we jingle the blueberries, we jingle his toy keys. He has toy keys too. And we let him know that we're safe and we're fun and we're moving forward and training. And we come in and we want him to jump on our shoulders. But if Catherine's not there, then he feels nervous. So every animal has his pack. So I'm assuming that you're Frenchie, you're his lead pack, right?
Mm-hmm.
So moving forward, every animal, when we train him, we train with positive reinforcement, and we train with that super sweet treat that he doesn't normally get.
Yes, and so eventually he'll adapt. I think one of the things, at least I correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, one of the lessons you were talking about is, you know, when you're around animals and you see the different personalities and you can witness the different personalities, you know, sometimes when we humans have an injury and people act certain ways or whatever, we take it personally.
Right.
And one of the things I've learned from watching the three dogs is, you know, Benny didn't do anything. There's nothing for him to take personally. Tino has an attitude problem. You know?
Right,
and I look at my
right.
own, you know, and I look at my own life, you know, and some things that people have said or done that have hurt my feelings. And it really hasn't been about me at all. In fact, they weren't even thinking of me. You know, they were thinking of themselves, you know, and,
right.
and in their own issues. And that caused them to act out. And another thing that you were just talking about, I don't know, I keep doing the positive reinforcement with Benny and it makes him feel better, you know, to get
yeah.
a kiss and, you know, to get some loving. And then Tino's kind of like, hey, wait a minute. He's over there alone
right.
with a, you know, with a great big pile of toys, but he's by himself, you know, and I'll just ignore him for a bit, you know, and give Benny kisses and hugs and things like that and help
love.
Him
yeah.
feel better, you know, about Tino's attitude problem. But I found that, you know, in all of that, just watching them, that you can learn so much about getting a better perspective on humans, you know, by those kind of lessons and really watching and tuning in. And even with wildlife, you know, I had some robins last year. A robin built a nest right outside my, well, in a bush right outside the front. And I kept sneaking out to the bush. And of course, you know, the mom wasn't real pleased with me because when she'd be sitting there and she'd hear me tiptoe back, you know, she would fly out
right.
and up to the tree and bitch at me, you know, from up in the tree, be kind of squawking at me. But I would just peek in and I saw the three eggs when they were eggs. And every day I went out and actually got to watch them hatch. I watched one actually hatch, come out of the egg. You know, the egg got a poke and then a crack. And I
right.
sat there and watched, you know, and, you know, the mother was protective of them, but after a while, she saw that there wasn't any reason to be afraid of me or that I wasn't a threat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't a threat to the babies. Not that she necessarily loved that, but, I mean, she didn't, you know, come and peck my eyes out or poop on my
right.
car or do anything, you know, like that. But I watched the whole process until, you know, they were, and I took pictures as a hobby. And so I took pictures and little videos of the whole event from beginning to end. And it's so cute after they've hatched and all their little heads are up in the air with their mouths open, you know, waiting for their mom
right.
to come and feed them. It's so cute. And then when it's time to leave the nest, and usually it's just because they, in the case of these robins, there were three of them. Eventually they grew to the point that it forced one of them out of the nest.
Right.
There wasn't room for all three anymore. And so somebody was going to wind up being alpha, whether they wanted to be or not, you know, because they were going to get bumped out of the nest. And of course, that one took a couple of steps and ran across the sidewalk, and its mom swooped down and they swooped up on a branch together. And, you know, just kind of watching how she let them learn. Yeah. And how she let them learn on their own. She nurtured them and protected them and fed them and then was there by them as they were leaving the nest. They stayed together as a family, at least in the immediate few days in the front.
Yep.
As a pack, yeah. And it's just really cool to observe that. So I love that about this program of yours, that people can see unique animals too. You know, it's not the horse or the dog necessarily, although
right.
you might have those too, but some of these more exotic animals, how exciting to be able to handle them and to observe them and then be able to put on these, to learn about them and then to be able to put on these programs for other people. What a great way to learn and to feel, like I said, empowered and break that
yeah.
stuck place where they were before.
Yeah.
Because once you have a success, it gives you the momentum to keep going and to try other things.
Yeah. So my members, my friends, come into the program and it's a day program. Now, not all of the friends are interested in working with the animals. So my job is to give them lessons about how cool the animals are. So let's talk about hummingbirds, right? So we built a hummingbird feeder to put in the backyard. Now, not all of my members are like, I want to clean enclosures, I want to help with the animals. They're more like, I want to learn about the animals and help grow my brain in a cognitive way. So they learn how to put together a bird feeder or a hummingbird feeder, and they put it up in the backyard, and then they observe that, and they take notes in that way. And my goal as the educational director is to give different opportunities to different members. So we have members that come in, and they want to get hands-on with the animals, right? And then we have members that come in, and they want to do presentations about the animals. And then we have members that just are like, I want to hold a snake because it feels cool and I like how it feels. And I want to debunk the myths about snakes, like you talked about, and how an animal affects our brain. And we have stereotypes about animals, but we want to break down those stereotypes and recognize how they help our brain heal. So those are all the different levels that we have. And you know, sometimes just going outside and watching an animal helps our brain too. So we have our wildlife education center where we have two foxes and we have these cool animals called cavies, and they're like the leftover parts of animals that you can Google them. They are from South Africa, and they are like they're like bunnies / deer / they're really weird animals if you Google them, cavy animals. And then we have our Eurasian lynx, and we all know what a lynx looks like. He looks like a bobcat, so he's very special to us. Yeah. So we do lessons where we go out back and we learn how to do enrichment with the animals, and enrichment is like that's like how we learn to entertain an animal that's in captivity. So let's say Eurasian lynx, he buries his food and he jumps really high So we set up something where we can, a pulley system where we hook up food for him and we do a pulley system, and then he has to jump to get his food, and he's got to use his muscles in his back legs, and he's got to exert a lot of energy to get that food just like he would have to do in his natural habitat.
Wow. That is so cool. I'm going to have to look and see if I've got one time, not as a joke, because I know some people take reading cards and things seriously, but I saw animal medicine cards once, and it was funny. I'll have to see. I think the lynx is in there, but
yeah.
When you draw these cards, and that's how I learned a lot about the owl, and it's funny you'd say that about the hummingbird. Just last year, I got a really cool picture of a hummingbird, and as you know, being around them, that is not easy because they are so quick. They flutter. It's like almost impossible to get a picture of one of those. And so,
right. You know how to get a good picture of them, Kim, is do research about a butterfly garden, which I am building for my friends for the spring. So they're going to come out and they're going to plant a butterfly garden. And in that butterfly garden is certain plants that attract hummingbirds. And those hummingbirds will come and you'll be able to get better pictures of them.
Well, I did get a feeder, and I decided one thing I decided to do. Well, a lot of times I'm so cued in on photographing them that kind of I purposely decided to put the hanger for the feeder outside of the window where my makeup table is, and there's a screen on that window so it wouldn't, you know, take a good picture, but it forced me to, you know, I go in there and put up the shade, you know, when I sit down to, I haven't really been putting on my face a lot during this pandemic, but, you know, putting on moisturizer, but, you know, it kind of forced me by doing it that way. That there are times like those times when I sit down at the makeup table and pull up the shade that I'm forced to just watch and just focus on the hummingbird, not taking pictures of it.
I love that.
But just watching. And then, of course, because the feeder's there, you know, later when I have my camera, I'm kind of like in the old Pink Panther movies, I'm up against the bat. That thing is on the side of the house. So I'll come up flat up against the back of the house and edge my way over towards the side and just peek, you know, with the camera in my hand to see if there's a hummingbird on there, or wait, because there's a lilac bush right across from it, and sometimes they're around there. And then I do have some bees balm and a few things for a butterfly garden, not the full thing, but a lot of it. I don't really want the dogs to get stung by the bees that come with the butterflies, you know what I mean? So far that hasn't happened. But so I have wound up getting a couple pictures of the hummingbird, but frankly, I like to do that when I can go. There's a park not far away and out in wildlife, you know, where there are natural butterfly gardens, because I really don't find the feeder attractive in a picture. You know what I mean? If you want a picture of a hummingbird, and I got one published that I took.
A hummingbird.
Yeah. Yeah. Not the ugly feeder, you know, so. I was lucky last year and got a really cool one just out and about at a park had put a butterfly garden there, which I think was cool. And I wasn't expecting it. I was taking pictures of butterflies, but I saw a really cool hummingbird and happened to get a great picture of it. The sun was hitting it just right as it was sucking on something out there. And I wound up getting that picture published, but I thought that it was really good for me because I do that with Hootie too, is I'm so excited about him.
Hootie
Owl. Well, I figured in the beginning I didn't know if it was a boy or girl. I've deduced that it's a boy now only because he's so small, and they say that the boy is smaller than the girl.
Yeah.
So with that guess, and he's come for 3 years in October, and he normally has left by now. He normally leaves the first week in March, and I think it might be a good idea, as sad as it makes me, but because that's, you know, when he's mating and having baby owls, and I'd love to watch that. It's just that they're clumsy
right. When
they come out, and with the dogs, you know, that tree is in the backyard where the three dogs are. And one thing I think is a riot, and I've never figured this out, is, well, I mean, it's in a way, I guess it's easy to figure out, but not easy. You know, he matches the tree so well. He is well camouflaged, and he's about 20 feet, 25 feet, maybe, never really measured it, but about that far off the ground. And the dogs have never actually seen him. Now, I know they smell him because they'll go, when I'm hanging around the tree, they'll hang around the tree, and I see their noses going. And heck, when people, I mean, a million feet outside of our privacy fence and out on the street are walking their dogs, they can't see that, but they can smell the people and the dogs walking by.
Right.
So I know they
right.
can smell Hootie, but they've never, like, looked up and met eyes, you know, acknowledged having seen him before in 3 years. And that just blows me away.
I gotta tell your listeners, Kim, listeners, so Kim and I became Facebook friends after we talked a little bit and we went over things. And I there's lots of pictures of Hootie on her Facebook. And I just, it brought me joy to look at pictures of Hootie. Now, I want you to take a second, as someone who has had my friends who are listening who have had a traumatic brain injury, and think about pictures of the owl and what that does for you. And it releases endorphins in our brain. So I want you to learn about how animals in general, give us a sense of healing and comfort overall. So Kim has this owl, right? And Kim's owl that lives in her yard, it's in your yard, right?
Yeah.
Brings her a sense of joy, brings her a sense of peace. Now, I, as Tiffany, who lives in upstate New York, way away from Kim, has looked at Kim's pictures and heard stories about Hootie, and I feel joy from this story that's going on, right? So imagine if you're around an animal in person and you're getting to touch an animal, or you're getting to see an owl in person, and what that does to the healing sense of your brain and how that affects you. So even having an animal that you may not necessarily touch or be a part of, an animal that you see, like a hummingbird, or a butterfly in a butterfly garden, like we talked about, right? brings mm-hmm. you a sense of peace and healing overall. So I 100% encourage you to plant a garden or get involved in something that has to do with an animal so you get that sense of healing or sense of peace.
Yes, I thoroughly agree. Now, the butterflies and the hummingbirds, I like them for their beauty and their freedom and just their life path. The one thing about the owl, who I can't touch, but this sounds funny, and I think with some of the animals that you have that people are able to touch, the same thing, but I do think that there's a way that you communicate telepathically. And
yes.
You can tell that when Hootie, for example, in these 3 years that he keeps coming back, he's looking at me and I'm looking back at him, and I talk to him a lot, and he'll turn his head and I'll bob back and forth and he'll bob back and forth.
Right.
And when he goes
right.
down in his hollow where you can't see him and it looks like it's empty and I call him, sometimes it takes a few minutes, but he'll poke his head up and look at me. And so, you know, we're still able to develop a relationship. And that was why I wound up writing a book about him, because people were so interested. A few years ago, I had a different page, and it's a different story, and we don't have the time. Facebook took it away from me. Page I had since 2011, the bastard, excuse me. But and I wasn't even talking about politics or anything wrong. But anyway, back then is when Hootie was first coming, and I could tell I had written one book about my brain injury, but people were just loving Hootie so much. I had no idea how much people, you know, loved seeing Hootie, and I kept posting pictures thinking, people are going to get sick of seeing Hootie all
sick
the time
them,
on here.
Right?
But they didn't, you know, they didn't get sick of it. And so I wound up writing a book about Hootie and a sequence of events that happened over the course of him coming and going, and what happened that summer just after he left, and then him coming back in the fall. And all of it centers around animals, different animals, and all in my own backyard. And what I found prophetic about that is I wrote it in the fall of 2019, and it was then I was realizing how content and what serenity you could find in your own backyard, whether it was watching those
right.
robins after Hootie had gone.
Or like the peace of nature, right?
Yes, exactly, that it doesn't have to be any further than your own backyard. So I think it's a good suggestion, and it doesn't cost much, the plants, and you can ask your local nursery or look it up on Google, plants that attract butterflies and hummingbirds, and
yes.
plant a couple of those in your yard. It's a perfect time for it, and you'll be able to watch them all summer long, and it's just a really awesome experience. But when I wrote that book, I didn't realize, you know, that we were going to be having a pandemic and that I would be you know, just in my backyard. And here I had already learned how to appreciate it and written a book about it. And then the pandemic comes. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, I know how to do this. And then, you know, Hootie showed up in October. And so it really is a great thing. And I appreciate what you're doing. And again, the website, folks, for anyone who might have come in late, is bridgesforbraininjury.org. And
mm-hmm.
you can like them at Wildlife Rockstars on Facebook. And again, for those of you who are familiar, you know this already. For those of you that aren't, you know now. If you're not by a pen, I always put the website in my program notes. So any
right.
of the places around social media or at braininjuryradio.com or my inaflash.org website, there will be a link, will be that link if you're not somewhere you can write down bridgesforbraininjury.org. But really cool deal. They have over 32 species of animals, and what a great way to treat mental health and to help all kinds of injuries. But in this case, people with traumatic brain injuries get re-engaged with humanity through nature and to help empower and find a sense of purpose. I just think it's a great thing. So thank you so much for coming on tonight, Tiffany, and thanks so much for what you guys are doing with your program. And I wish you lots of luck, because I just think this is great. What a twist on your regular service animals that most people
yeah.
think about, you know, in a different way that you're doing this, I just think is really cool, and was excited about having you on to share it with everybody else. So make sure to check out the page, everyone. And we're out of time, so thanks so much for being on, Tiffany. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to staying
thank
in touch.
Thank you, Kim. Yeah, thank
all
you,
right.
Kim, for taking the second to share your story about Hootie, because she's super important in how he's affected you and made you happy overall. Because even if we don't have a traumatic brain injury, animals release that super happy feeling. And I want us all to understand, TBI or not, animals help us get through our day-to-day life.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, thank you. You have a happy what's left of St. Patrick's Day. I guess it's over for
yeah,
you now,
right.
but everybody else, I see we got a bunch of partiers in the chat room ready to go to bed. So thanks again, Tiffany, and everybody check it out. Good night.
Good night. Have a blessed night.
You too. Okay, I'm just going to play us out. As long as I played one song off the Are Insane, and it is Brain Injury Awareness Month, I'm going to play us out with Brain Injury Road by The Are Insane. Good night and God bless everyone. I'll be back next week. Thank you so much for being here. As always, I appreciate it. Good night.
bothered at the world, don't care enough. We got drugs being used, kids so confused. Cause who out their whole life, all they've seen is abuse. We've got countries fighting countries, people killing people. When are we gonna stop and realize everybody's equal? I don't know. But as far as I can tell, the rich are getting rich while the poor are needing help. So dig right down deep inside of your soul and find the peace, love and happiness shining like gold in your mind.